You're listening to Spurs Cast, episode 583. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on the Spurs Cast. Today, I'll be joined by Project Spurs and Spurs on 6 writer Jonas Clark. In this episode, Jonas and I will discuss the Spurs' play in their first 4 seeding games and observations of some individual players. Let's get started. Jonas, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on here.
You know, we're glad to have you here on the Spurs Cast for the first time. Can you give the listeners, I know that if Spurs Cast, if you've seen Project Spurs, you've been seeing some of Jonas's articles lately, but then also over on Spurs on 6, he writes for us over there as well. Can you give the listeners some background of yourself?
Sure, yeah. You know, if you're from San Antonio, you might have heard me on the airwaves of Ticket 760, where I got my start here in the city, just working the boards for the afternoon shows over there and filling in on the mornings occasionally. And since then, you know, right after that, I got picked up with Project Spurs, started covering the Austin Spurs last fall. And, you know, what a better year to come into it when you've got 3 great rookies, 2 first-round draft picks, and a lot of hype around that team. So, you know, it's been a great time covering the team this year. You know, the Austin Spurs were in position to make a playoff run this last year before the G League season halted and ultimately, you know, did cancel, you know, their season back in June. And, you know, it's been work doing that, and you know, the Spurs takeovers on game react
for sure, and yeah, and so I'm really glad to have you on here, because I do want to, because the Spurs are playing so many of their current Austin players in these bubble games. I really want to get your input, because you've seen more tape on these guys than most people. So let's begin, Jonas. We're going to first begin by recapping the first 4 games, because last week when I recorded with Michael DeLeon, they hadn't played an official game yet, a bubble game. They had just played their scrimmages. So we're going to go through a quick little recap of where they stand. So the Spurs are 2-2 to start their bubble schedule with 4 games left, unless they make the playoffs. So let's go back to last Friday. They defeated the Sacramento Kings in their first bubble game by 9 points. DeMar DeRozan led the way with 27 points. He had 10 assists. On Sunday, they got a win against the Memphis Grizzlies by 2 points. DeJounte Murray led the way with 21 points and 10 rebounds. Then on Monday, they lost a crucial game to the Philadelphia 76ers by 2 points. Derek White missed a key free throw there in the fourth quarter, if you watch the game. And then DeJounte Murray made a mistake on defense where he left Shake Milton open from 3, and Milton hit like the dagger for the Sixers. So that was a crucial loss for San Antonio there. And then on Wednesday, the Nuggets were missing a few players, the Denver Nuggets, a few starters, but the Spurs still couldn't beat them. They lost by 6 points there. They were in it for most of the game and even had a lead or tied the game, at least in the fourth quarter, but Denver was just too much their size on the boards. They had 14 offensive boards. And then in the fourth quarter, the biggest difference, I wrote an article on Project Spurs, was just the difference in made threes in the entire game. And in the fourth quarter, Denver got away with 5 made threes. So, Jonas, just kind of give me your initial reaction of these last
few games. You know, I mean, obviously when you start off with 2 wins, you can say that you started off pretty good. But we knew that I think if you really look at the matchups, those are 2 games we were also going to match up very well in terms of length. You got 2 smaller guard-centered teams in the Kings and the Grizzlies before you get into, you know, a more front court heavy in the Sixers and then ultimately the Nuggets last night. So it's been an up and down roller coaster. I'm still seeing not everything I want to see, but we are seeing a better team out there. I know you did share a stat out there today about you know, the Spurs shooting more threes, or maybe not even more threes, but keeping pace with their opposition in terms of threes, and we're only a -3 in terms of the 3-point shots this point in Orlando. And so that shows, you know, there's a point where lots of people were wondering if Coach Popovich could coach in the 3-ball era because of his unwillingness before to focus on shooting from range. And I think that we are seeing, you know, the NBA is running with this tag, a whole new game for the Orlando bubble. And we're seeing a whole new Spurs team. You know, granted, there's the influx of the guys from Austin, but the real difference maker is Keldon Johnson. He's the only one coming up from Austin to get real minutes outside of, you know, Drew Eubanks, even though hasn't worked his way past Jakob Poeltl in terms of minutes. But Keldon Johnson is up there, and he's starting to pull down 20 minutes a game.
Yeah, for sure. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of those stats that you mentioned there about the three-point shooting and then also Keldon. And kind of what you said there, you know, I just feel like it depends what your expectation was of this team. I mean, if I just actually went back and looked at a stat from July 8th, Bet Online, a betting website, had actually said, you know, the over-under for the Spurs would be three wins. And so think about that. You know, they're only halfway through these games, mm-hmm. and they've already got two wins already under their belt. So there's a chance that they could even beat those expectations for them, because the expectations weren't very high for this team. But now all of a sudden, you know, they've already got two wins. They've played really well against two good teams in Philly and then Denver as well. You know, those are actually winnable games for them. They were in position at different times to win those games, because so they could be 4-0 right now. But you know, at the other case, mm-hmm. they could also be 0-4. So let's really dig into this team and see how they're doing. So one thing I'm really excited to discuss now is actual real data. So I know that last week Mike and I were talking about this new starting lineup. You know, we had seen them in three games and three scrimmage games, but that was only scrimmages, so we couldn't really, the NBA right. doesn't track that data. So now we actually have some real hard data here that we can actually look at with this starting lineup of DeJounte Murray, Lonnie Walker IV, Derek White, DeMar DeRozan, and Jakob Poeltl through four games. Okay, so according to Cleaning the Glass, they've played in 78 possessions together. They started off really strong, you know, these crazy, really good numbers where they were really holding the teams down defensively. I think that was just Sacramento and Memphis. But then now it's kind of gotten away from them. So now in 78 possessions, they're a minus 4.8 points per 100. They score 119.2 points per 100 and allow 124.1 on defense points per 100. So what we're seeing here is that their defense is giving away too many points, that even though their offense is really good, it's better than what they left off with at the pause of the season. They're just not keeping up with what the amount of points their defense is giving up. So my question, I have a few questions here for you, Jonas. What do you think here? Do you think that opponents are starting to figure them out now that they're actually watching tape on this five-man group? Do you think that it's maybe a lack of size is kind of getting exposed when they played the Sixers recently, and also the Nuggets with Jokic and those other big men? Or do you think the sample size is just way too small still?
I think that it really comes down to lack of size. I think that, okay. especially because most of this lineup was consistent, or these guys we've seen before the season stopped, right? Lonnie is a new insertion into that starting lineup, and of course Jakob is. But Jakob doesn't quite bring as much to the table as a LaMarcus Aldridge or a Trey Lyles. I understand, you know, the advanced stats of how much he really helps, you know, in immeasurable or unnoticeable categories when you're just watching a basketball game. But when you break down get deep into the numbers, you can see his impact. But I think that it just comes down to that lack of size and that bully ball. If you look back at that Memphis game, they started really strong, Memphis did, in terms of using Jonas Valanciunas. And he was kind of eating Poeltl alive, and then for whatever reason, they got away from that and decided to run the ball through Ja a little bit more when the post was really our weakness. And then when you go up against the Kings don't have a real post presence either. Size wasn't really going to be a factor in that game. It was really going to come down to guard play ultimately, and that's what happened. And then you look at these last two games, and you're just going up against two top-tier NBA teams. The Sixers are in the top five in the East, and then you've got the number three Nuggets. And they both have the upper echelon of big men in terms of Jokic and Joel Embiid. And when you see that difference and you see how they're able to push around our one piece of size in Jakob Poeltl, I think that's where it is. So the sample size isn't too small. I think we've gotten to see enough of most of these guys. Like I said, outside of Lonnie and outside of Keldon, all these guys have been on the court together before the break. So those are our really only the two new insertions. And I think that teams kind of figured that out before, that we were just a lot of guard play and we didn't have a whole lot of post presence. So it's just teams playing their game against us, and we're just not big enough to handle it.
Yeah, and you know, something I go back to too is like thinking about that Philly game where Jakob got in foul mm-hmm. trouble really, really early. So you know, they had to right away go to Drew Eubanks, and they had some trouble there. But then also, you know, you look at, like you said, I think that the size is a huge difference. I know that when you look at the boards, it doesn't look that bad in terms of offensive rebounding for the opponent, except for that Denver game. The Spurs had actually been doing well on the boards of cleaning up. But you see the effects, though, because we're going to get through some of this data, and you do notice that you think that, you know, a team with a bunch of wings, you know, younger players, that they'd be out on the break, and they're actually not getting a lot of fast break points. They're actually one of the least scoring teams from the fast break on offense. And the reason for that is because Coach Pop is said, you guys need to help rebound on possessions on defense, because the one big man, either whether it's Drew Eubanks or Jakob, they can't get all the rebounds out there. So we are seeing that they're not getting to use that speed advantage that they do have because of their lack of size. So that's the thing I wanted to note. And then I also go back to DeMar DeRozan there at the four. I know that now he's not really having to guard a lot of wings out on the perimeter anymore like he normally does. He's having to guard players like Jaren Jackson Jr. Before he got hurt when the Spurs played Memphis. Also, I go back to Tobias Harris, had a really good game. So even like those bigs, even though DeMar's also playing out of position defensively, he's going against some players that still have an advantage over him on his defense. Let's talk about some of the starters and just offensively now how they've played. Lonnie is averaging 10.5 points per game here in the bubble in the starting unit. DeJounte Murray, 12.3 points and 3 assists. I did note it because even when I look at their offensive rating and some of their advanced numbers, those two players. But it just seems like when they don't have the ball in their hands, they don't really know. Surprisingly, you would think DeRozan's the one who has trouble not knowing what to do when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. But he's actually been really good at just being efficient in the time he gets to make some plays. So I do see Lonnie and Murray struggling there. You don't expect a lot from Jakob in scoring wise, but again, he has had some trouble where the Spurs guards and wings kind of get into the lane. They give him like an easy pass to try to finish, and he's had a lot of trouble just finishing over different bigs here in this bubble play. Derek White's been really strong as a starter. 21.3 points per game, 5.5 assists. He's launching 8.3 three-point attempts and shooting very well, 46% from three. And then DeRozan, 22.3 points and then also 7.3 assists. And they're very efficient in their minutes on the floor. So what have you thought about offensively the starting group?
Offensively, when we first had those first two games and against the smaller lineups, the young guys, Lonnie came out a little bit hotter and Derek came out a little bit hotter. And right now it's taking Derek, he's really getting his numbers in that second half. Him and DeJounte both, even though DeJounte's numbers aren't quite up there, but they're both kind of waking up in the second half. But it's that first quarter when they come out on that first unit, and that's where we're having some real, I don't know if it's just, motivation issues, or it's taking them a little bit extra to warm up their shot, or whatever it is. But the scoring is fine, and as a unit, when they come back out in the second half and Pop goes back to that starting lineup down the stretch, I think that you can see them anchor down and they play well then. So my question really just becomes, what's going on in the first quarter to have them kind of out of sync and out of sorts and just not quite checked in yet? And then they're obviously checked in the fourth quarter, but every game so far has been crunch time in the fourth quarter. So you can see that they're checked in because the play, the play mirrors that. And the situation almost forces them to be checked in. But when we're just starting off a game, they almost look mostly disinterested. And like you said, movement without the ball has been a little bit rough. Lonnie Walker has found himself in a good spot for a good open corner three. He's gotten good at that. Yes, and that's sure. definitely his mm-hmm. shot, but you don't see him maybe going there enough. And so I'd like to see that a little bit more, but, offensively, there's not a whole lot more you can do. One thing I might see here, and if we had a couple more games, I think you would definitely see it, would be maybe swapping out Lonnie Walker for a Keldon Johnson. He's starting to take some of his minutes already. And I think that, when you break it down, you can kind of just sort of see where Keldon's come to a point of equaling Lonnie, who had, I think, 32 minutes in the first game. And he's averaging now around that 20, 22 minutes per game, and Keldon's is on the rise. So I think that there's a point where Keldon's going to pass him, and I think that also just goes to the fact that, it's easy to say about the young guys, but I think that Keldon's still just more talented overall than as a scorer from inside, outside, defense, everything, than what you have from Lonnie Walker. I think Lonnie's a great sixth man, but I don't think he's quite starter material yet.
Okay, yeah, and so one thing, you brought up a good point that I hadn't even thought about until you just mentioned this. So I do wonder that now that, Coach Pop's talked about this talked about this, and also DeMar DeRozan, where like in the first half, DeRozan doesn't want to, you know, be the guy who takes over immediately. You know, he's been saving that for the fourth quarter, and we've seen that a lot where he's really stepped up in the fourth. So I do wonder if that has part to do with it. The fact that like Derek's starting now, so maybe they think he should be the guy that starts off the games as their main playmaker when it used to be DeJounte and LaMarcus as well. You know, and then LaMarcus isn't there, so maybe there's part of that of like who really kicks off possession. Because I know Pop says, you know, we don't really have a playmaker. Anyone can start our offense. He said that recently, but you know, really they do have a playmaker. Whoever's going to, you know, initiate the pick and roll, whoever's going to call whatever sets they're going to use. And so I do wonder if maybe there's some like juggling back and forth of who starts off the game in terms of you know, who's taking over first. And so you know, lately we've been seeing Derek do that for the most part. So I wonder if that's part of it. And then like you mentioned, you know, whether or not they should continue running the same lineup or else change it. I would agree there that if there was going to be a change, I would definitely put a Keldon in place of Lonnie, just for both of their sake, where Keldon's, you know, a bigger defender, and he's able to score without, you know, having the ball. And we're seeing that he has like he's basically scoring on secondary action almost all the time. And then also defensively, you know, he's really good and he has that advantage. Then Lonnie would get more opportunities off the bench, because really it's just Rudy Gay out there who knows how to create for that second unit. And so Lonnie would maybe have a little bit more responsibility rather than just shooting corner threes from what he's been able to do and play out in the open court.
Yeah, for sure. And he'd be able to handle the ball a little bit more too, where you could maybe see him coming up the court with the ball and create his own shot. He has that athleticism to be able to do that, but there's just so many playmakers, like Pop says, there's so many playmakers on that first starting unit that you really need. Any of them can run the offense and can get the game started, but right now it almost seems too like everybody's a little bit hesitant to figure out who that guy is. Nobody's willing to take ownership and just say, okay, I'll be that guy right now. Derek, you know, it wants to get it started. We already know DeMar wants to defer, but somebody's got to start making shots. And we see a lot of passing, but then it doesn't turn into a whole lot in that first.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll see how they continue to mesh and whether Pop keeps that starting unit. Let's move over to the bench, which has been a really, really good, you know, just the Spurs bench continues to be one of their strengths, whether they're missing players or not. So they've won in all four games so far. They've outscored their opponent, the opponent bench, between 16 and 27 points in each game. They are in 23 possessions. The group of Quindary Weatherspoon, Patty Mills, Drew Eubanks, Keldon Johnson, and Rudy Gay, the five of them, they in 23 possessions, they're outscoring teams by 7.7 points per 100, and they're doing a lot of that with offense, scoring 130.4 points per 100 and holding defenses to 122.7 points per 100, so they're just like a scoring machine. Rudy Gay, like, me and Mike kind of saw this coming last week, you know, because in those scrimmages, I saw that Rudy was putting up, you know, 20-plus point games, and he just has a lot more responsibility, a lot more of a role than what he was getting when LaMarcus was there, when Trey Lyles was there. So because of the lack of big men, and because there's not a lot of players who can create in the second unit, Rudy's really relied upon it, so he's really stepped up. 19.8 points per game he's averaging right now in the bubble. Keldon Johnson's quickly stepped up, 13 points per game. He's already hit his career high in scoring twice in doing that. And as I made some videos recently, he does this without even running pick and roll, without, you know, getting running the offense in the half court. He does it off catching a pass from somebody who drove in and then either driving or shooting a three. He does it in the open court. He does it in playing one-on-one by just seeing that he's faster than his defender and bigger and stronger, and he can finish. So Keldon's just completely, you know, making a lot of growth here. And not only that, Pop mentioned this after the last game, that his three-point shot is really surprisingly doing really well. So in the bubble, he's making 67% of his threes in the bubble. And for the season, I know he only played 9 games prior to the bubble, he's shooting 57% for the season. So as I was, you know, writing an article about him last night, I did wonder, you know, how did he shoot in the G League? And so I looked that up, and he was, I think it was something like 39 of 93. It was 25% from three in the G League. So since you've watched more Keldon in the G League, I did want to ask you, what do you attribute this surge in 3-point shooting for him? Do you think that it's because maybe he worked on it during the offseason, during the shutdown, and just got a lot better, or do you think right now it's just too small of a sample size and he might regress to the mean like how he was in the G?
You know, the sample size might get a little bit smaller, but especially when I consider G League stats, you know, there's a learning curve when you first come into the G League and trying to figure out who you are within the Spurs system, and especially for being a first-round pick, they're trying to kind of get you set into your role, you know, hey, it's, you know, we're not going to run everything through you. You're going to have to be, you know, but we still have these developmental goals for you for San Antonio. And so I always kind of take those first couple months of the G League season with a grain of salt. But then as you saw him develop on it, you know, throughout the year, he got a lot more consistent, I really believe. And I think that probably what you're seeing, even though the sample size might be a little bit small, and this will definitely taper off, you can't continue to shoot 67% from range. But I think that what you're seeing a lot from Keldon is a lot – he's shooting in motion, if that makes sense. It's a fluid shot rather than a forced shot is what I'm seeing a lot from him. And he's just with better talent, too. Nothing against the Austin Spurs, but it's a developmental league. There's a reason they used to call it the D-League, right? So you're working with other guys down there who might find you out of position or might not feed you in the right spot, you know, and stuff like that. So I think that playing with the better talent that we've got at this level is going to help him with just overall shot selection. But like you said, you know, he's great at just creating his opportunity, and he's not doing so much off the pick and roll. This is just finding him in space. And so you're just asking a scorer to score. And I don't think that you could probably break down the stats, but I wouldn't say that most of his threes have been heavily contested.
No. I think I looked at it. It's like 79% have been wide open. So the majority of them are wide open.
Yeah, that just comes down to making the shot you're supposed to make then.
Yeah, for sure. And like what I'm seeing, at least whenever I watch tape, is that it just feels like he reads the defense so well. Like he already knows what he's going to do. If he catches it and he knows that his defender's running at him, he's going to drive by him. If he thinks that he has the room and he can get his shot, like you mentioned, a fluid shot, he's gonna put it up from three, and he's getting, you know, he's getting it to fall for now. So Keldon's been really impressive here at the start of this four game seeding games. Let's move on to another player who's coming from the Austin system. That's Drew Eubanks. You know, he's averaging 7 points off the bench with this second unit right now in the bubble games, and he's just been really good. You know, he's been having some crazy highlight blocks. On the defensive end, but then on offense, you know, his little jump hook is just like a patented shot for him. You know, I expect him to make it every single time, and he's just, you know, always in the right place at the right time. Can you talk about what you've like seen from Eubanks here since you saw him as well?
I think we're seeing a much better, improved Eubanks. He's a guy who's made a couple of appearances in San Antonio before, but he's always kind of played to his size, where he looks 6'9" out there. But this Austin opportunity for him coming into Orlando now is honestly, again, to use the NBA's phrase, it's a whole new Eubanks, where he's able to rebound in situations where he's got Embiid on his back and he's the one, and he's able to knock Embiid out of the way and still come down with that rebound or even force it back up. We talked earlier about maybe Jakob, you know, is missing some of those point-blank opportunities, and he's just failing to use his size, and I think that Drew is kind of hitting above his weight class right now, which is phenomenal to see for a player who, you know, went undrafted out of Oregon State, got a two-way opportunity with the Spurs, and now he's in a contract year with his two-way contract, you know, expiring after the season, so he's playing with house money. And when you look at, you know, what Drew did at Austin, he averaged 15.9 points per game and shot, you know, right around 63%. And I think we're seeing most of that continue. Even as a backup role, he's starting to contribute more in the rebounds and in the scoring than what we see from Jakob Poeltl. So this is the development you want to see from these guys. And this is he's a two-year project. You know, he's coming at the end of year two, and this is what you've been waiting for to see from him. He's playing himself into an opportunity, hopefully, with San Antonio. I know I wrote earlier this year that I didn't think that he was going to find a spot, that we were just too crowded, you know, with too many guys standing at 6'9", you know, mid-200s. But I think he's easily playing his way into the lineup for me for next year for the roster.
Yeah, you know, I've really changed my outlook on him as well. You know, in a lot of my cap projections, I've always had them just kind of not bringing him back. Like you said, because of the limited roster size, you know, they're gonna have too many players. So I actually think that might change now. I mean, first of all, his contract is really good. He could be a restricted free agent this offseason for $1.6 million. So I mean, they could just tender him that qualifying offer to have him for at least one more year next year as a restricted free agent. So I really want to see what's gonna happen. And yeah, like you basically described his game really well. He's been playing really well. I don't want to spend a lot of time on Patty Mills, but he has been impressive. Just the fact that he sat out all of the scrimmage games because he was basically forced to. The coaching staff didn't want him to. they wanted to give the young guys some minutes, but then all of a sudden, you know, people got injured, so then they needed him to play. But he's already coming off the bench in three games with 10.7 points per game. Just typical Pat. He's hitting all his shots, playing with a lot of tenacity, a lot of fire, creating extra plays on defensive end. So, you know Patty how he is, just doing his, you know. It's funny too, because of him, you know, we asked him, you know, it's been months since you've played real basketball, and he's like, for me it's just like riding a bike, you know, you just, it never goes away, you just know how to do it. So yeah, so Patty's just been impressive like usual. But the player that's really been intriguing to me is Quindary Weatherspoon, because, you know, he didn't get a lot of time in San Antonio before the shutdown. And so, you know, I just want you, maybe if you can kind of give the listeners and myself as well, just kind of a little scouting profile on him, how his game was developing in Austin. And my big question to you is, now that I've actually watched him in real games lately, I do want to know, you know, does he tend to avoid those open threes? Because I've seen the defense go under on him a lot. And is it maybe him just adjusting to maybe not wanting to take shots because, you know, he's the newest guy on the team and getting some minutes? What do you think about his three-point shooting as well?
You know, his three-point shooting, I think that, yeah, I mean, you do see him missing some open ones. But I think that that's more of the Spurs system, where he's still thinking about the game a little bit, especially at the San Antonio level, and making sure that he's providing his role. And in that ball movement, where he might be second-guessing whether he really has an open shot or if there's a better look that's going to be for a more efficient shot than himself. In Austin, you know, he only took 4 3-pointers per game, so he wasn't a high-frequency shooter. I think he ended up third on the team in terms of three-point efficiency at 33.3%. Now, that's I qualify that with shooters who shot more than 3 attempts per game. Because you got some guys, you know, who might be shooting 100%, but they only made 1 attempt. You know, if you look at Drew Eubanks at the San Antonio level, he's only shot 1 3-point attempt, but he's 100%. So I qualify that with 3 or more. That qualifies you as a shooter on that team. And so he ranks third behind, you know, who you would expect to be in terms of, you know, Jeff Ledbetter kind of leads the team in 3-point shooting in Austin. So Quindary is a pure scorer. And we knew that coming out of Mississippi State, where he ran their offense through him. And so now in Austin, he was learning another role. And so I think that might be the hesitance that you kind of see from Quinn at times in San Antonio, where they're trying to get him to be more of a contributor and a facilitator. And he was in the tops of the team in terms of assists too in San Antonio, in Austin. So I could see him where they're trying to make him more of a facilitator at the next level, because when you can combine that with his ability to score at the beginning of the new year, right at the in the start of January, coming out of 2019, Quindary had 2 games where he back-to-back went for 30-plus points went on a tear. And what you don't see from him quite yet is consistency. And I think, again, at the Austin level, it's a little hard to gauge when you have 3 or 4 guys being Drew Eubanks, Chimezie Metu even, you know, down there, and then Luka Šamanić that you're trying to develop, and Keldon on top of Quinn. So I think every night they tried to get different guys involved, and so usually Keldon went off, and then you would get somebody else to go off with him. And I think that Quindary is one of those guys that's still trying to find his fit, and especially where he fits on this team. At this level, I don't think he wants to be quite just a 3-point shooter, and he's always going to be wise and look for the better shot, and that could lead to a little bit of hesitance too.
Okay. Yeah, and also he's made some interesting defensive plays as well. So, and you can tell that, you know, you can tell that Pop's a little bit more intrigued in terms of trying to see what he can do out on the floor, because, you know, he could have easily just benched Quindary and just gone back to Patty Mills and then Marco Bellinelli back in there as well in the lineup. But instead, he wanted to run a lot of Patty Mills and Quindary together. So he really wants to see what Weatherspoon has. And so he's given him this opportunity for now. And like I said, I've been kind of impressed by what I've seen.
And that's a great thing too, because Quindary, just like Drew, his two-way contract is up. He was only a 1-year two-way contract, which is kind of bittersweet. So I think that at this point, because the team does have to make a decision on him, I think they're considering him heavy when you look at the minutes that he's starting to get. It's a lot of first half minutes, I think, because Pop is still trying to win these games in the second half. But when he's out there, you can see him doing a lot of the right things. And like you mentioned on defense, him and Keldon both from Austin are bringing a lot of that fight. They really go for the steal or go for the swipe on every given play, defensive possession, you know, offensive possession for the other team. And so they're always attacking the ball, attacking the offense, and then on offense, they're just attacking the rim.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, like I said, that bench unit's been really good. Now we're going to move on to our next topic, which is kind of deals with what we mentioned earlier, which is swapping some players from the starting lineup. So one thing that one of our fellow Project Spurs members, team members, emailed me earlier or notified me and asked me, you know, what are the stats with Keldon Johnson and Derek White? And so I was like, okay, let me check here. And so I looked up their numbers when they're on the floor together this season, and wow, are they off the charts here. So according to Clean the Glass, in 206 total possessions this year, this whole season, not just the bubble, they are outscoring teams by 24.3 points per 100. They're scoring 128.6 points per 100. That's elite offense right there. And then defensively, this is one of the better groups, at least when they're on the floor. They're holding opponents to 104.3 points per 100, which is the 93rd percentile, which is like barely worse, like barely, just barely worse than like what the Milwaukee Bucks do on defense. They're like the best defense in the league. So these two players have been really good. And this goes back to prior to the shutdown of the season. You know, they were playing in lineups off the bench together with like LaMarcus Aldridge and Trey Lyles at times. And even those lineups were really good with the data. So you are seeing that whenever Keldon and Derek are on the floor together, they're really, really scoring well, but then also, you know, holding teams down. And you see why. You just know that both of those two players are two of the Spurs' best wing defenders. Like we mentioned about Derek, he's able to create for himself and for others. And then Keldon, you know, if Derek gets in the ball, he's able to, you know, quickly score, whether it's driving to the lane or now they're shooting threes as well. So again, like, if they do go make a change in starting lineup, you might see Derek and Keldon start playing in the same starting group together. What do you think about that combo?
I mean, it's lockdown, you know, and I think that they've seen it. I think that right now Pop is just trying to maybe get a little bit more out of Lonnie, which is why he keeps challenging him with that starting lineup. And this might be a rough way to look at it, but he almost wants, if he's going to move Keldon up there in the long run, he'd almost rather Lonnie lose that spot than, you know, to go ahead and make the coaching decision to jump Lonnie in his production and just go ahead and immediately put Keldon up there. But I mean, it's lethal, and you talked about this before too, and we see it with Derek. You know, it's pretty obvious the way that he sees the game before things happen. He's one of the most instinctive, and just he reacts really well, but he anticipates what's going to happen, and that's why you see him pulling the charges that he does. That's why you see him getting to the free throw line consistently, because he's able to work his way to a foul. And Keldon has that same kind of mindset where he sees things happen first, which is how you can see him bully himself through the lane, but he already saw where his steps were going to be before he made those steps. And that instinctiveness turns around and helps them both on the defensive side of the ball. So what I really like about this combination is this gives you the opportunity, if the team were to hold on to somebody like a Bryn Forbes because of their defensive shutdown between the two of them, you could run somebody like a Bryn Forbes who, you know, is rather poor on defense and put him out there at the two, put Keldon at the three and Derek at the one, and then between the two of them, they can, I really believe, pick up the slack for Bryn Forbes' defense. But then still, you only gain on the offensive end of the floor. You don't lose anything because you've got two elite scorers in Derek and Keldon, and then the hot streak, you know, that can be Bryn Forbes.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll see, you know, if you know, whether they start getting more minutes together or if they actually make a lineup change there with the starting unit. So we'll kind of see. All right, so Jonas, the last topic I do want to discuss is, you know, I'm really excited that we actually have real games now, so we actually get some real data. So I have these crazy spreadsheets, and I have like one that has all the pre, you know, shutdown data, and then I have all the post shutdown data, the bubble data. So like I started to take away some little trends here from the four games, and here's some things that I've noticed in terms of their offense. So what we're seeing on offense from the Spurs is there's a slight increase in paint shots. So what do we know attribute that to? Well, there's a lot of more wing defenders, players that are attacking the paint, so they're getting to the rim more because they're losing that you know, that post-it presence or that pick-and-pop presence of LaMarcus Aldridge and Trey Lyles. They're also getting to the free throw line more. Their free throw rate has increased as well in these bubble games. What I have seen a decrease in, which is a good thing in a way, but just barely, is a slight decrease in mid-range jump shot attempts. And then also, they're, even though, you know, you'd think that they'd have they shoot more threes because, like, no LaMarcus or Trey Lyles, for some reason, they're not actually shooting that many more threes. It's just a slight decrease in three-point attempts. On defense, what have we seen? This is very obvious, since because they're playing smaller, they're going to get attacked in the middle of in the paint. And so what are we seeing? Teams are definitely shooting way more shots in the restricted area against them. Actually, 6.5 more. That's a lot per game. They're also teams are not taking those floater range shots, the non-restricted area shots, because obviously they're getting closer to the rim. They're also not shooting mid-range shots, which is what you want to force the team to do, because again, they're getting closer to the rim. And then threes, they're actually shooting less threes. So I do, that's the one thing about playing these smaller lineups, is that teams aren't shooting as many threes, and the Spurs are contesting them better. I've looked at the percentage of shots from opponents that are wide open, and they're not as wide open against this current Spurs team. And then just looking at the math game in the bubble, they're a minus 14 on two, so this is looking at paint twos and mid-range shots. So that was usually one of their biggest strengths before the shutdown. Like we mentioned, we attribute that to the lack of size. But the area where they're really closing down, one of their biggest weaknesses is the three-point line. Like you mentioned, they're only a minus three right now on three-point shots against the opponent. So they're basically limiting opponent threes, but then also scoring well with them. And so they're just a minus three. And you know, that was one of their big flaws prior to the shutdown. And then of course, like I mentioned, they're still doing really well at getting to the free throw line, but not fouling so much and putting their opponent on the line. Do you have any thoughts on just their styles offensively?
Yeah, and you know, you look at the slight decrease in threes, and that's going to happen when you take Marco Bellinelli out for three games and you take Bryn Forbes out for four games, because that's their specialty. And even you even further limit, you know, the 3-point attempts when you take Patty out for three games on top of that. So what you're seeing is guys stepping up from three. Derek White is shooting. He's shooting better from three. I think before the hiatus, he was in the 20s, like right around 25 to 28% from three on the season before the bubble. And now he's shooting, I think it's 40% plus. He's been on fire. And so when you have those guys, and even DeMar, you know, is shooting a little. He's willing to take a few, and he's actually made a handful, or not a handful, but maybe two fingers, two 3-pointers. But that's an effect too when you also look at the decrease in the mid range. Is DeMar DeRozan deferring? So he's not playing 48 full minutes. He's really just kind of playing that second 24, and he's facilitating the first 24. So when he's making fewer attempts, you've got these young guys, they really do like to go for the higher efficiency shot, which is going to be closer to the rim, so they're increasing their paint shots because Alani is driving to the rim, DeJounte is driving to the rim, even Derek is trying to drive to the rim, Keldon is driving to the rim. So, and that they have the ability to do so, and you don't have a LaMarcus down there kind of clogging up that space. You do have Jakob Poeltl, who is one of the best at clearing the lane for him, at least for getting down there and having a good opportunity. So we're seeing a smarter offense, which, like you said, does translate to better defense. Maybe the lack of defense in the paint is also keeping teams from shooting the three. So because they're just like, yeah, well, I'll take this easy two then. Which then, you know, if you can go ahead and keep pace with the other team from three, like we have with just that minus three, and then you're managing your two as well. I think that the piece that really skews that data is the last couple minutes in the Nuggets game, when we went ice cold and they were just hitting easy twos, and you had maybe a couple of cherry pick opportunities for them, and you give up four easy points that way. I think that game might have skewed it a little bit more, because I think that through three games we played very even in Orlando, and that was our biggest loss, of course, too, against the Nuggets in terms of score. So I like what we're seeing. This is a good team, but maybe we just need to see. I think it's time to maybe see the young guys. I want to see a little bit more Quindary, and I want to see a little bit more of these combinations where you slide DeMar out and you go out there with a Keldon, a Lonnie, and a Derek, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm waiting to see that, the four lineups. I mean, the four wings together. Yeah, I don't think that Pop's put them out there that much already in this. Yeah,
it could get really fun.
Resumption season. Yeah, for sure. Real quick before we get ready to close out this episode, you had your latest piece up on Project Spurs. It's called Austin Spurs Are the Key to the Spurs Puzzle Taking Shape. Can you give the listeners just some background?
For sure. You know, when you look at the Spurs since 2016 and the retirement of Tim Duncan, and that's kind of where the decline of the organization started, if you will. But we still had a Kawhi Leonard, and we still had two-thirds of the big three with Tony and Manu to carry us into 17 and then carry us into 18, and that was the hope. And then in 2019, you lose those other three pieces. DeJounte wasn't quite yet developed. Derek White was just coming off of a G League title with Austin. And then that summer, you lose Manu. First you lose Tony to free agency. Then you lose Kawhi to trade, which was writing on the wall. And it was necessary, but it still happened. And then you lose Manu Ginobili to retirement that August. And at that point, the centerpiece of the puzzle was no longer clear. And so when you're building a team, you want to be able to know what you're building around. And so there was a lot of uncertainty as to what this team was building around. So they had to kind of reshuffle the puzzle pieces, if you will, to building this roster. And some of those pieces that once were core and kind of maybe seemed like the middle portion of a puzzle got pushed to the edges. And now we're just trying to keep this team together. And then how do we build inward? And you saw the approach, and hindsight is 20/20, right? It really helps when you can kind of look back and start to see this how the organization was putting this puzzle together. But they go out and they get, Derek White's development, I think, shocked everybody. We wouldn't have gotten to see it if DeJounte wouldn't have gone down with the ACL, because Derek never would have become starting point guard a quarter of the way through that season, and then go on to do what he did in the playoffs too, and where we got to really see his full potential. But we got to see him as a defender that whole year, and so he became a key piece to this roster. And then you have the drafting of Lonnie Walker, and Lonnie Walker's a great player, but I don't think he's quite a franchise player. And so you have him kind of on the fringe with DeJounte holding the outside together that makes up your Bryn Forbes, your LaMarcuses, you know, even the trading of Kawhi for DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl. Those guys are more just mid-level puzzle pieces that come in and maybe help build around a core, but we didn't quite have a core yet. And then this last draft class where you get your two first-round selections and Luka Šamanić, and then the last trade piece that came in from Kawhi Leonard is Keldon Johnson. And those two, Keldon Johnson pays off right away. He's a blue-chip product, came out of Kentucky, and he was built for this stage. And if you ask some draft experts, you know, they say that, you know, coming out of high school, he was potentially a lottery product, and it was actually his time at Kentucky and his lack of use there that maybe hurt his draft value, because he didn't get to be seen as much and featured as much. And so then, you know, he's that next core piece that when you look at the stats, it helps. You know, like we just got done talking about how he matches up with Derek White on both offense and on defense. And then that makes the puzzle a little bit clearer. You start to notice who you're going to really start to build around. And I think that Luka Šamanić is going to be that last puzzle piece that really completes the center of it, because he's going to be your modern stretch four, stretch five. That's going to help space the floor. He shoots the three ball well. It's not quite efficient yet, but to know that he has a nice fluid motion and the right mechanics coming in, that gives the organization something to work with. His size and his ball, you know, his ball handling, especially at his size at 6'10", maybe 6'11" if you stretch it, you know, is something that is necessary in today's NBA. And like we just got done talking about, you know, how important size has been these last couple games. And so when you start to look at it and how they've become the centerpiece of the puzzle, and you look at the overall puzzle pieces you're working with right now, this is one of my favorite stats right now, is for Orlando, of the 16 guys to make the trip out to the bubble, 9 of them have Austin roots. And so that's why you see the Austin organization and how they have developed in terms of bringing in former Spur Blake Ahern to coach the organization in 18, and then that development process since then, how that has really utilizing Austin the way it has and sending these guys to Austin for a quicker, more a quicker chance to develop, because they'll have more minutes in Austin. and the way that the organizations develop these guys together, having them share time at practice, the proximity between Austin and San Antonio, and how involved the San Antonio staff it has been on the development of these young guys, you can really see how Austin is, as you get to the title of the piece, Austin is that key element in developing today's Spurs and helping put together that puzzle.
Yeah, so Spurs Cast listeners, definitely check that piece out. It's over on ProjectSpurs.com. Again, it's called Austin Spurs are the Key to the Spurs Puzzle, taking shape by Jonas. Also on Project Spurs, if you visit our site, I have some film breakdown with some stats also provided. It's called Keldon Johnson's 20 points versus the Nuggets. And just the big emphasis there is, it's pretty much everything Jonas and I talked about, how he's really just learning how to score without even having sets run for him. But just it's going to be up to him and his development in the future when they eventually start giving him plays and picking roles and stuff. How does he learn? How much growth does he make with that? Because that's where really he doesn't have like a bar, really, as far as how far his development can go offensively. Because we know he's going to be a spectacular defensive player down the line, and he's already showing that now. So that's what that piece is about. There's also a piece called Game Film on the Nuggets' fourth quarter threes that I created. Steven Anderson's continued to keep you all notified of what's going on with these games, so he's providing recaps after every game. Like Jonas mentioned, he's a guest on Joe Garcia's show called the Spurs Takeover Postgame Show, so make sure you check that out each night after a Spurs game, and then it comes on live the next day on ProjectSpurs.com if you missed that show. And then lastly, going back to that loss to the Sixers where Shake Milton hit that critical three, I did a video just kind of breaking down the last minute of how the Spurs lost that game. So thanks again to Jonas for joining me here on the Spurs Cast. Thank you also to Michael DeLeon for producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.